My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Mike Carlin hosts a great podcast called Uncorking a Story. Mike, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Uncorking a Story profiles successful writers and authors to uncover how their background and life experiences influence the stories they create. We learn what motivates them, their path to success, and what fuels them to keep creating. And it all starts by asking one simple question. Where does your story begin?
Ooh, interesting. Where can people subscribe?
You can follow the show at uncorkingstory.com, at marketingpodcast.net, or by searching for Uncorking a Story wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Sunny Bonnell.
It's getting better, but I think optimistically we have a long way to go. You know, looking for people in divergent voices and divergent thought in everything that you do, specifically surrounding your C-suite and also at the leadership level. So we've made it a lot of our cause, you know, to not only give back to women that, you know, are trying to start businesses or grow brands or just look even to us for mentorship, but also to encourage the industry at large to think differently about how women are seen and also how they are empowered.
Sunny Bonnell is no stranger to starting fires. As co-author of the best-selling business book Rare Breed, A Guide to Success for the Defiant, Dangerous, and Different, and co-founder of Motto, a C-suite branding partner that works directly with founders, leaders, and teams to create ideas worth rallying around, Sunny revels in and works with brand innovators that shape our world. She is a fierce visionary, high-octane keynote speaker, and provocative columnist with Fast Company. Her palpable drive and brazen philosophy has garnered clients like Virgin, Google, Microsoft, Hershey's, and more. Sunny, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I have to make sure as we start the interview that I don't have anything flammable, which is especially important when someone's bio says no stranger to starting fires. So we value safety here at the On Brand podcast. But why the flammable bio, Sunny?
I think that historically, if you look back at my career, I've made a lot of fire starting moves, you know, in terms of dropping out of vet school, starting a company with $250, wanting to change the branding industry and the way that women were also seen in the branding agency and in the branding agency world, and ultimately how women leaders are perceived in those roles. I think that looking at all of that combined with being a bit of an underdog, it drove me to flip the script and in as many situations as I possibly could, including my own career. So I think that's probably where some of that's coming from. And also most people would probably say that have worked with me or have been in the room with me that I have a lot of passion, a lot of energy. I try to fire everyone up, get people really excited about not only what is possible, but when things are presented as impossible, I have a tendency to push right through and try to encourage and inspire people around me that anything can be done. And that we should try to do those things, both, you know, as a company, you know, as a vision, as trying to build out whatever you're fighting for in the world. You have to have a lot of gusto in order to be able to do that.
I think that's a really good point. And I want to come back to that last part. But before that, I want to back up to what you said about flipping the script on women in and how women are perceived in the branding and branding agency world. You know, we're over 400 episodes into this thing called the On Brand Podcast. And just by the very nature of a lot of things in marketing, in tech, you know, we end up with a lot of male guests. And I know I am always in search of trying to diversify that as much as I can. And talk a bit about how about what you found, kind of the before and hopefully the after of women in branding.
Well, we're still 0.1% of all agencies owned by women. So the statistic was that when we started, probably much less. I don't know if it's gotten much better, but we certainly are seeing more women in the industry than we have before. You know, when Ashley and I started in 2005, in our early 20s, we started Motto after dropping out of college. We had no money in the bank account. We were in a very conservative town that was primarily ran by the old guard. Many of the advertising agencies back then were ran by the old guard. And we were very new to what was really in the industry. We didn't understand. And I think that naivety probably in some ways was a force, you know, to have behind us, because we sort of charged in, not really understanding the full velocity of what the industry was really and truly like. We were very early on met with a lot of opposition, both from people much older than us, but also many of the rooms that we were in, we were sitting across from men, mostly white men, to be honest. And
yeah.
The truth is that there was a bit of, you two young women, what could you possibly know about business? And even today, even though we're 17 years in, which is outstanding in and of itself, but to have shouldered so much of that throughout our career, and still, while things have gotten better, we still sit in rooms where I've been across from leaders that have diminished women on their team in the moment. As a matter of fact, we tell a story in our book, Rare Breed, which you might get to in a moment, but we wrote a book in 2019 with HarperCollins called Rare Breed, A Guide to Success for the Defiant, Dangerous, and Different. And we talk about a situation that we encountered where somebody in the room was being very derogatory to his female counterpart. And we ended the call and got up from the relationship and just said, we can't do business with you. But it happens more often than we've probably talked about, certainly have shared. And I think it happens very commonly for many women in business or in positions where they're in leadership or C-suite positions. I think that it's getting better, but I think optimistically we have a long way to go. And it's important to have voices out there and women who are pointing out when there's injustices, but also for men that have positions of power to look around, and not just for, you know, white, but all diversity, you know, looking for people and divergent voices and divergent thought in everything that you do, specifically surrounding your C-suite and also at the leadership level. So we've made it a lot of our cause, you know, to not only give back to women that you know, are trying to start businesses or grow brands or just look even to us for mentorship, but also to encourage the industry at large to think differently about how women are seen, and also how they are empowered. Most of the time they're overlooked. And I think that, or they're doubted, or they're called an underdog, or they're sort of shoffed off. And I think that, you know, it's time that we change that conversation. So we've certainly made it a big part of our mission to be to be a strong voice in that. We've certainly had our fair share of situations that were just questionable at best, you know, with very powerful people that you kind of go, really? Like, yeah. This is like 2022. This is still happening. Like, come on, you know? And I imagine that that's very similar for all types of underserved communities.
Absolutely. And I realize now that I even kind of positioned that question poorly of talk about the before and after. Like,
yeah, no, there's no after. Yeah.
No,
but truly, like, even when I think back to 2005, when the majority of the calls that we got were from men. And then I saw something kind of interesting happen where in around 2007 to 2009, every other call that we began getting, or every third call that we were getting, was from a woman, and they had left a corporate job, some of them being senior VPs at huge institutions, and, you know, were abandoning the role because they felt like, number one, they couldn't go any further. They were not being allowed or afforded any opportunity to grow. And so they were leaving and jumping ship to start their own thing. And I think that was the most promising thing that I saw, is that, you know, if you couldn't find a way, you could make a way. And I thought that was always really interesting. And now, you know, many of the people that do reach out, you know, I'd say it's far more equal and equivalent in terms of, you know, the types of businesses that they're working with and who they're ran by and ultimately who's at the top, you know? So I think there is optimism there. I think we can and have come some way, but it's certainly not where I think it should be. And I believe that's why most women who've been certainly ran a company or grown a company know what the real issues are and how to tackle them.
Well, and you mentioned this earlier, and I wanted to make sure I did get back to it. Talk about Rare Breed, and you kind of hinted at what led you to write this, but talk about what why in doing something that is can be as challenging as it is, it's important to be defiant, dangerous, different. Somewhat flammable, perhaps.
Yeah, a little hot to the touch. Well, yeah, Rare Breed was born out of a really interesting story. So in 2007, we were about 2 years into business, and we had hit a pretty low point where we were struggling to make ends meet. You know, we were in a small conservative town, as I mentioned earlier, and we were the outliers. And we had a very pivotal conversation with my dad, who we were probably very quick to throw in the towel. We were like, you know, we don't know if we're cut out for this whole entrepreneurship game. And he said something really interesting. He said, well, you two are a rare breed. Not everyone's going to get you, and not everyone's going to love you. Not everyone's going to understand you, but the ones that do won't forget you. And so you have to succeed because of who you are, not despite who you are. And that, you know, sometimes someone just says something at the right time where it is the moment that you sort of either decide to press on or you fall back. And it was one of those moments where we said, well, no wonder this is so hard and this is such a difficult journey, is because we are different and we are sort of throwing shade at the way that tradition has been running. And we do believe that we have a different approach, and perhaps we are a little bit too hip for the room at times and too opinionated and too this and too that or too something. And we flagged that phrase in 2007 and held on to it until 2018, when we got the book deal and we decided to call it Rare Breed. And the whole book's premise is, as you can probably tell from its name, it's a book about harnessing unconventional leadership to drive change in times of growth and transition. It is about taking all of the parts of yourself that are counterintuitive to your success. Everything that anyone has ever told you, you're too this, you're too emotional, you're too weird, you're too rebellious to succeed. We said, well, what if those things were actually your virtues? What if we could turn those so-called vices, and we could identify what those vices are, and we could flip the script on them and say, well, these actual seven so-called vices are truly virtues. And they're not just virtues to be leveraged in your work, that they're to be leveraged in your life. And as we studied it, you know, using the blueprint of our own career, and then obviously working with, you know, some of the brightest minds in the world now, and overcoming a lot of those objections early on and a lot of that doubt, you know, that would mostly unseat most people. The fact that we were able to kind of power through that, we learned a lot. And so that book was very, very much a sentiment. It was a manifesto to all the people that had ever doubted us, but more importantly, to help other people that probably have these traits and don't really understand that they're at work and that these traits can be very volatile. They're very dangerous. You know, when you talk about the seven traits, which they're rebellious, audacious, obsessed, weird, hot-blooded, hypnotic, and emotional, these are all seven very, very dangerous traits that people either have and they embody and they're powerful traits and they're things to be celebrated, or they can be actually, perilous and lead to your undoing. And what we learned over the years was that most people didn't understand that the reason that a lot of doors were closing or they were having to jump from job to job is because they hadn't really fully understood the power of the trait. They didn't understand the power of the virtue. And so they were navigating their career with these vices kind of like full steam ahead. And what we were trying to do within the book was say, let us explain not only what they are when they are a vice, but let us explain when they're a virtue and how you can actually unlock that, not just at a personal level, but at a leadership level. And we just had no idea that the book would take off the way that it did. It became a bestseller. Within a few months of its launch, we were sitting down with the heads of Microsoft to walk them through rare breed thinking and how rare breed thinking could be applied to their organization, both from a diversity standpoint. The next thing you know, we're, giving talks and keynotes. And then, you know, we've got a quiz that people can take to learn what trait they are and ultimately how to unlock that, both at the team level and then at the leadership level. And, you know, then we have the Fast Company column that has gone viral many times. So it's just been really interesting to be on that journey and say something that my dad gave us in 2007 became a movement. It became a way of thinking and describing yourself. You know, when you think of rare breeds, they're often labeled as, defiant or dangerous or different, or in some cases, an outlier, a misfit. And those are really negative terms because they sort of are saying that there's something about you that's flawed. And the whole book's mission was to flip that thinking and say, no, this is a superpower. This is something actually that you can not only learn to use, but can be very effective in your career trajectory or path that you're on, or even when you're in teams. And so it's really become it's unlocked a lot of doors for us in terms of being able to sit down with some of the brightest minds in the world to talk about this thinking and how it can be applied across companies. So that's been really exciting.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Mike Carlin hosts a great podcast called Uncorking a Story. Mike, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Uncorking a Story profiles successful writers and authors to uncover how their background and life experiences influence the stories they create. We learn what motivates them, their path to success, and what fuels them to keep creating. And it all starts by asking one simple question: where does your story begin?
Ooh, interesting. Where can people people subscribe?
You can follow the show at uncorkingstory.com, at marketingpodcast.net, or by searching for Uncorking a Story wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show.
So in the excitement of Rare Breed, you talked about your work and what that's led to. I want to do that thing I do sometimes here on the show, which is kind of take apart phrases that are of interest to me. So talk about being a C-suite branding partner. What's different about the coming in at the C-suite?
Yeah. So I think the simplest way to say it is we solve really tough problems for really smart people on their ascent to iconic status. And what that means is that while very in the early days, we were usually brought on to solve a visual problem, what we learned very quickly, not only through the writing of the book, but obviously now through our career path, that we are really leadership and culture consultants, and our business has evolved to primarily work with the founder or CEO or C-suite executive leadership team. And what we're trying to do is help them align around business vision and culture. So most of our clients now are going through leadership changes, they're entering into new markets, they're launching new products, or they're just simply stuck or stalled. And to really solve that, what we do is we come in and unlock not only a bit of our book thinking, you know, the Rare Breed mindset, but we also work with them on what is the idea worth rallying around that sits at the heart of their brand and the heart of their business, and ultimately architect new ways of not only articulating that, but exciting people on both sides of the table. So both internally and externally. And so that's been a bit, probably in the last, 5-6 years, that's been the majority of our work now. We're really brought in to help companies solve really very complex problems. And while we just happen to be really good at brand, you know, in terms of being able to do the visual piece, if we're thinking about where we sit in the room, you know, in the house, we are definitely on the strategic side now, and do a little bit of visual for some companies that ask us to do it, but we're slowly but surely kind of releasing a lot of that type of work simply because we found that our value is at the top.
Well, I think it's interesting in how these challenges from the client perspective present. I can't do this without thinking of like a medical scenario. You know, someone comes in with a sore elbow and it's a symptom of something else. And I feel like how do you find clients present with a challenge like this? Is it they present with a branding or even a simple visual challenge, and it ends up being something deeper that does fall into leadership and culture? Or is that changing?
I think it's an inside-out job. Historically, though, if we look back at a lot of the companies that we have worked with, I still see a great deal of uneducation in the market, which is disheartening and yet also a challenge that presents itself to say, well, why is that happening? You know, is it because there's a disconnect between the founder or the visionary of that company and ultimately who they sort of deploy the brand to? In some cases, they've sort of hired a brand manager. A lot of the times we'll often get a call from a brand manager who's been in their post for 2 weeks and they really don't even know what the problems are. And they think it's merely a visual issue. If they think that we can button up the brand universe, or we can tighten up the positioning language, that they will have what they need in order to do the job. Or if the brand has gotten splintered over time, they'll sort of approach it as, if we could just fix this, you know, we'll be off and running. What we're finding, though, is that it is in fact an inside job. It's starting from within. And a lot of times you cannot break the trifecta. You have this sort of triangle, if you will, and you have the why, the who, and the what. A lot of people are forgetting a lot about the who, in terms of like, if you, and we talk a lot about this at Motto, we have this sort of mantra and tagline, ideas worth rallying around, which really sits at the heart of the culture. It sits at the heart of the brand, of the team and the organization that believes something. But you also have to understand, well, who's going to carry that flag? You know, if we don't know what hill we're marching towards and we don't know what flag we're carrying, how can we possibly fix anything else, right? So it's kind of a back of house, front of house thing. And what you find is they want to clean the front of house, but they don't want to tend to the back of house, when the back of house is what's ultimately driving what happens front of house. So, you know, a lot of it is, we've positioned ourselves, Motto specifically has positioned ourselves now in such a way that we're, I would say 90% of the people that reach out, they know what we do. And they know that we're kind of the perfect specialist for them. For the other 10% or 15% that reach out, I think they're just slightly uneducated. And I find that the relationships are less successful because somebody's not communicating. They have to kind of, you know, you can have a brand manager that takes you through 6 months of a rebrand and have the CEO pop in and be like, that's, none of this is right. And so we just sort of make it a hard line in the sand that it's just not the way we play. You know, the way that we play is that we're working directly with leadership so that we can enforce some of that change or get some of that change held through, or otherwise it's sometimes just a facelift, but it doesn't solve the interior problems. So I think that it's just I think it's a global issue. You know, I mean, I'm assuming that probably people listening to this that have agencies or have some form of an agency or even a consultancy understand this problem. They're probably nodding their heads with me right now. This is just common. And, you know, I think it's our, you're seeing more of companies come out and say, well, this is actually a culture thing, or, but you also have a little bit of misguidance where I'm now seeing branding companies that have literally very little leadership or culture work saying that they're culture focused. And that's really murky territory, because you've got to have a lot of understanding of change management. You have to understand how cultures are built, how they're shaped, how they're forged, how people hire against them. There's a lot of intel and knowledge that you get from working with leaders and cultures to affect change at the brand level. And you got a lot of people out there saying they are these things when they're not. And that's also dicey as well. So I think it's just an industry thing that I see at large that I personally would like to see change.
I apologize for laughing in the middle of that, because you said there's probably a lot of people nodding along and listening, and I was sitting here nodding along as you were talking about nodding along.
I wish I could have seen it.
I know. Sadly, it's the audio theater of the
audio only.
Yeah. But I am.
I felt you though. I feel you, my man. Yeah.
I'm the first
you were.
Of what I'm sure will be many listeners nodding along, because that's so critical. And I love what you said before, because I feel like, you know, a lot of this inside out, a lot of the nod worthy stuff is because of what this job has become. And you said, you talked about change management in there. And I think a lot of times that's certainly an important skill in the world of work. But I think specifically when we're talking about this thing that sometimes ends up in the branding column, I'm not sure enough of us have those change management skills as sharp as they need to be able to successfully do this work, like you said, and to be able to overcome something like, yeah, the brand manager, and then the VP comes in and says, no, it's not that. That's where you need that change management to get past that, to get through that, and to be successful today.
Well, and you've also got, you combine that with what I am seeing also, and you've probably seen this too, but just this sort of like, you feel like you're in a really bad episode of Brand Snatchers or Clone Wars, where you go out and you're just like, did somebody steal somebody else's playbook and not get the memo? Like, it, all these brands are coming through the door and they're saying things like, I want to be the next X, you know, Uber, Apple, you know? And I say, why don't you try being the next you? And I find that they don't, it's almost like they woke up and looked in the mirror and they just didn't like what they saw. And so they thought that by robbing and deploying another playbook, that they could somehow fix what's going on, and that a brand makeover with no substance behind it was the answer, you know. And then you've got companies that don't understand the value of strategy, where I'm, again, people are probably nodding their heads to this too, but I'm seeing a prevalence of people calling in almost like hot sauce on the brain, where there's a franticness that they have got to get this done, you know, in like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, you know. It's just like literally like high pressure, high stakes. And they're just like, oh, strategy, like, you know, right. 4 months of strategy, like no way. And they don't realize that without those two rooms, you know, you strategically, this is sort of the blueprint of where the organization is going, and it's affecting everyone around them. And they don't understand that without that playbook, without that sort of understanding of like the vision and the hill that we're marching towards, and what is the flag that we're carrying? What are we fighting for? What are we fighting against? You see that this sort of hot sauce in the brain is provocative through the whole organization. And they sort of cast that poor planning onto you and expect you to somehow work a miracle, you know. But the truth of the matter is that with the right companies, with the right mindset, with the right types of temperaments, I find that we can go in and affect extraordinary change. And not only can we transform these companies in ways that are shocking, you know, in terms of not only from the way that they grow in terms of revenue, but the way that they grow in terms of culture, the way that they hire, the way that they move through the world, just changes, and it becomes much, much more powerful for them, and also is a huge case study for us. But you have to be, you have to have the right set of circumstances to have a company who will allow you to do that, who will allow you to work on them, to your metaphor, the way that they need to be worked on. It's kind of like going to a physical therapist and be like, let's revamp the entire culture and say what, 2 weeks, you know, chop, you know, meanwhile, this is something that you know, your arm tendon is whatever. And you need several weeks, you know, maybe even months of work to kind of get you back to a playing position. That is really important. The companies are approached the same way. There are really no quick fixes. So we tend to steer clear of them. If anyone comes to us and starts to mumbo jumbo around that, we just sort of turn them away. And interestingly enough, when we turn them away, they want us more. And it's more of just, it's not to be prideful. It's just to be, we're not going to have good success, you know, unless we can actually take the time, we can do the work, we can solve some of the things that need to be fixed. And then brand sort of clicks into place, because a lot of the things that were happening that were leading the brand to become, you know, like unrecognizable in some cases, is because it's driven by what's going on behind the scenes. You know, things aren't clear. I mean, the biggest thing that we solve for is alignment. That is the number one thing that we work on, is alignment. People who just can't, well, there's two parts. There's alignment, and then there's articulation. And alignment and articulation go hand in hand together. You cannot have one without the other. You can be aligned, but if you don't know what you're actually saying and you don't have a thing to rally around, it is almost impossible to build anything from that.
Well, now I'm nodding along for all kinds of reasons, including the fact that I need to call my physical therapist.
You need to go in there and be like, look, I need six months worth of work on my arm here.
Exactly.
I've been holding the mouse for too long.
Oh, well, I'm nodding, I'm smiling, but Sunny, it is now time for me to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Oh, geez, there's so many. Well, one that I love and is near and dear to my heart, and if you were seeing me now, you would know that I'm in a fedora. But one of my favorite brands, one of the brands I love, 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 is Gorin Brothers, which is a hat shop. And as you guessed it, I wear a lot of hats. I have about 50 in my collection. Most of them are Gorin fedoras. It's a legacy brand whose roots were actually established in 1885. So talk about brand value. And they've remained relevant for over a century. So I just love that they're really dedicated to the art of bold hat making. And really, it's become a symbol of my identity and my signature look. It tells you a lot about who I am, you know, without me having to say a word. So that's a brand that makes me smile all the time. Now, to some people that are particularly my partner, who every time I get a hat, she says, another one? Another hat? But you know, this that to some people, they might see it as, I need an intervention. But to me, it's just every single one I get, it's a smile.
Oh, I love that. And as you can hear, my office dog loves it too, and is apparently reminding me that that I need more fedoras in my collection. And now,
well,
I know.
I can tell you where to go.
We all know now. Well, speaking of where to go, Sunny, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
So you can go to Motto. It's wearemotto.com. And we're also on Instagram and LinkedIn, also at We Are Motto. And if you're interested in the book, you can go to rarebreedleaders.com. And there's a link to buy. The book is available everywhere books are sold, including Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, Books A Million. It's available everywhere. So we'd love for listeners to grab a copy and connect with me on LinkedIn and see how they get along with it. It'd be interesting to hear from the audience how they enjoyed the book.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure there will be a lot of smiling and nodding. Sunny Bunnell, thanks for being on Brand with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a true, true honor.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Mike Carlin hosts a great podcast called Uncorking a Story. Mike, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Uncorking a Story profiles successful writers and authors to uncover how their background and life experiences influence the stories they create. We learn what motivates them, their path to success, and what fuels them to keep creating. And it all starts by asking one simple question. Where does your story begin?
Ooh, interesting. Where can people subscribe?
You can follow the show at uncorkingstory.com, at marketingpodcast.net, or by searching for Uncorking a Story wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.